Festers Navarre Mardi Gras Parade. The theme this year is the celebration of 250 years of American independence. Submit your events at newsradio923.com.
No opinions, no arguing, just the news. Right now.
Right now.
Chris Bryant, News Radio 92.3.
I'm Austin Price for News Radio 92.3.
Every few minutes, you get the latest local news, traffic on the fives, weather, and updates you actually need. So whether you're in the car for 5 minutes or 50, you're always caught up. Pensacola Right Now with Chris and Austin. Weekdays 4 to 7.
News Radio 92.3.
Informative, local, dependable.
We're caught in a trap. I can't walk out because I love you too much, baby. Why can't you see?
Good morning, 7:40 here on News Radio 92.3. I'm Andrew McKay. It's a Pensacola Morning News. Sheriff Chip Simmons is in Washington, D.C., this week at the National Conference for Sheriffs, and it's good to have you, Sheriff. Welcome back to the show, sir.
Good morning, Andrew. How are you?
I'm good. How is it there? I mean, it's cold here, but not that cold.
It's been cold.
Yeah?
Yeah. No, it's been cold. They have a lot of snow here. In fact, the reflecting pond in front of the Lincoln Memorial was frozen over, and people were playing hockey on it. It's kind of an unusual sight.
Did you go out on the ice?
Yeah. I wasn't playing hockey. Yeah, I tried. I'm not a good ice walker, so I think I'd just stay on the hard surface.
Wait, so you did or didn't go on the ice?
I did.
Okay,
but
good.
I was slipping all over the place.
Okay,
but
all right.
Yeah,
I think obviously we need a picture for social media of that, so it's kind of cool.
I tried. Let me put it this way. I tried.
All right, fair enough. I'll allow it. Before we get to sheriff stuff per se, although this kind of is, I don't know if you heard this, but we were just kind of breaking the news, I guess, the last half hour that West Florida Board of Governors of the Library Service here in Escambia County in January passed a change to their policies and regulations that now attempts to prohibit firearms and weapons inside the library. It does say except as allowed by state law, but of course, allowed by state law means you shouldn't have a prohibition because they're allowed by state law. At least guns are. And it says staff may contact law enforcement if an individual fails to comply. So if I go into the library with an open carry handgun and the library staff calls you, they tell me, hey, you can't do that. And I say, yes, I can. They call you, what happens?
Well, we'll likely have a pleasant conversation and go about our business because we went over this, 6-8 months ago when the first DCA overturned the open carry prohibition and allows for open carry and concealed carry in public spaces. And again, I'm not an expert in library funding, but as I understand it, they're funded by tax dollars, mm-hmm. which in my book makes them a public place. And, We will treat it as such.
So you guys typically respond to a call, but you're going to come, you're going to talk to me, I'm going to talk to you, and then you're going to talk to them, and that'll be it.
That's correct.
All right, fair enough. That's what I figured. But I always like to check with the law enforcement officer because you know they kind of put you on the line by saying they were going to contact you, and I assume same for PPD. Although you don't speak for them, I'm sure the message would be the same. Let's talk about a couple of things that have happened here locally. We had a case last week of two abandoned dogs on Beck's Lake Road.
Yeah, we had a pretty alert deputy. He noticed that there was a truck traveling up in that area with two dogs in the back, and just took note of it. I guess because it's cold or because it's a rare sight, I guess. And then a little bit later on, he saw that the dogs, the same truck, or he thought the same truck, but the dogs were no longer in the back of the truck, which, again, they could have been dropping dogs off, could have been doing different things. But he decided he'd go and check it out, and then an individual told him that they had seen him drop the dogs off without food or water and then just take off. The deputy was able to get the dogs in the back of the police car, and we took the dogs to Animal Welfare, Escambia County Animal Welfare, and ended up tracking this guy down, arresting him for animal cruelty.
Good work. I mean, a terrible thing happens, and good work that you guys solved it. We also had a series of armed robberies, but I guess it turned out to be he was robbing them with employees, but with a fake gun. Is that right?
Ultimately, that's what it found out. But if you're the one being robbed, you don't know if it's a real gun or a fake gun, and
right.
You can certainly get You can certainly get charged with it, and you can also get shot by carrying a fake gun. In this situation, we were able to, our deputies did a really good job of tracking down some information. What we used is some of the cameras that we have and license plate readers, and our analysts looked back and tried to see if that same type of a vehicle was in all three locations. To make a long story short, we were able to develop a vehicle, to be able to also develop a suspect. And I believe the suspect had just gotten out of prison back in October when him and a cohort were arrested for, robbery, I believe. So, wow. And it was a good job by our guys. And, again, it was a fake gun, but I don't know that certainly don't matter to me. You can still get yourself in trouble.
Well, my understanding, you correct me if I'm wrong, is that if you engage in an armed robbery with a fake gun, the penalties are no different than if you had taken an actual gun. Is that right?
That's correct.
Okay. Other than you might not be subject to the same, like if you're a felon, you know, possession of a fake firearm, is that even illegal? It's not illegal to own a non-firearm if you're a felon, right? Like an airsoft or something.
Yeah, I think it's the intent. What are you using it for? Again, you can't be robbing people with it, or you can't act as if it's a real gun.
Got it.
And display it as if it's a real gun. But that's if it's fake, it's not a real gun.
And also to point to the value of the database that you guys keep of the license plate, the license plate readers that. You keep that for what? It's 30 days, if I'm not mistaken, and then you can query it. So if somebody reports a crime, you can look back over the time frame within that 30 days and query it, which is why you were able to find, to put the pieces together to find this person based on the license plate data, right?
That's correct. And remember, this license plate readers are only on public roadways. And yes, it's only for 30 days, and then it is dropped off the system.
Your agency has done a very good piece of work this last couple of days in answering the question of if a bomb is in the water, is it a bomb or a torpedo, right?
Yeah. We get a call that there's this we get a call as a torpedo. So we report that, what we got the call about, and it said torpedo. So it's kind of funny to me that we had a lot of these comments saying, that's not a torpedo, that's this and that. Well, thank you, Admiral. All we're doing was reporting what is reported to us, and we are not experts in ordnance or bombs or rockets or any of that sort of thing. All we know is that when we see it, let's not touch that, and let's call the experts, which is what we did. And come to find out, yes, it looks like one of those training ordnance things they drop from airplanes. And so, fortunately, that's what it was. No one was injured, and much to do about nothing.
Very good. Well, which is, still good work, obviously. That's the point is we live in an area where there's been a lot of ordnance dropped, a lot of training missions, and and even, obviously, during wars and all the other kinds of things. So it's good that you guys are available to take care of that stuff. You guys are in D.C. What are you working on? Because you're up there not just for – I mean, you're there for the conference, which is good. In fact, you're presenting at the conference, right?
Yeah, we were asked to present on a lot of our engagement initiatives. So that was an honor for us to present to the nation's sheriff. So we did that earlier this week, and today we're about to head over to the Capitol just to talk about a couple of things.
Well, hold on. Present on? I mean, was it like Blazer Academy? Was it community outreach? Was it like you guys do a lot of things? What were you presenting on?
It was about the Blazer Academy, our Dream Big program, about our movie nights. I guess because we see it every day and we do it every day, we don't understand that that's not the way it is in other parts of the country. And they were really interested in how we went about it, how we funded it. And so we obviously brought a pretty good PowerPoint. And we had my chief of staff, Whitney Lucas, was with me. Chief Deputy Tommy Leiter was with me, and we answered all the questions that we could.
I love it. I'm trying to picture. I know, I think it was when you were at PPD and body cameras was one of the first agencies to use them, and you pioneered that. And the Blazer Academy has obviously been a huge success. The idea of that becoming kind of a nationwide norm is so exciting because of what it can mean for those kids, what it can mean for crime avoidance, for, deferment ahead of time for the criminal justice system, sort of all the things. I love it. I hope a lot of people take you up on it, start doing it, and, succeed with it. But you said you were heading over to the Capitol today because you're going to engage in a little bit of lobbying. Is that right?
Yeah. We're going to meet with our local delegation. We're kind of divide and conquer. One of the things, even though we don't run the jail, one of the things that we're going to push for them to approve is what they call the Reentry Act, which would increase access to Medicaid-covered services and allow for basically continuity of care for those inmates that when they get incarcerated. And the paperwork that I have shows 60% of the jail population is suffering from mental health issues. And if you recall, when I was the chief corrections officer, we did a point in time, more or less, and about two-thirds or 66% of the inmates that were there were in the infirmary were there for mental health type of issues. So the numbers are staying up high, and we're going to push for them to increase access to Medicaid. And also a couple things I want to talk about. One is some regulation on the market of crypto kiosks. There are a lot of people don't know it, but there are a lot of these kiosks in small convenience stores and gas stations. And I don't know that I've ever heard anyone buying cryptocurrency from there unless you're a criminal. Now, there may be some legitimate reasons, but this ATM Fraud Prevention Act would regulate the market and maybe help help people from being victimized by some of these elderly scams.
Yeah, it's interesting. You mentioned that the crypto kiosks, and I mean, I have no idea. I'm not into all of the stuff, and so I wouldn't have known if it were, but I know there's ATMs, but that's it. I would not have even been able to tell you that there were crypto kiosks at the Circle K. So that's just okay. But I can see how it could be, used nefariously, obviously, and that's what you're trying to prevent. You also had a thing you're working on with rental scams. Is that right?
Hey, yeah, I do want to make mention a lot of the scams that we're hearing about are people claiming to be in law enforcement and saying you owe us money or you missed a court date and you have to pay a fine. And what they will do is they will tell them to stop by this convenience store or that convenience store or a little cigarette shop, and that's where they would pay in Bitcoin. So that's where that's coming from. So, but also in relating to scams, we have been seeing an uptick in rental scams, basically someone trying to rent a house that does not belong to them. And a lot of these things you can just be aware of. The first thing is pressuring you to do it quickly and or paying through debit card type things or even Bitcoin. Those are obviously concerns that it might be a rental scam. There's no in-person meetings. We've got this listed on our social media platform, so you can take a look at it and some things to watch out for. If they don't want to meet with you in person, that's a red flag. There's no lease or paperwork. That's a red flag. The pressure to act, as I mentioned before. And one thing is unrealistically low rent prices. It's that thing where if it seems too good to be true, it probably is.
Right. No, that's a good point. And if you're ever wondering whether somebody, if you ever have doubts about whether somebody is the authorized, leaseor, you could always look up on the property records. You could look up in the Escambia County property appraisers. You look up who owns the house, and you can verify them with an ID. I mean, if it really comes to that point, right?
Yeah, or you can call us. I mean, you could call us and ask us to check it out if you're suspicious of something. Or like you said, you can check the property appraiser's office. That's a quick and easy way. They have a pretty good access, and you can do some checking on your own. Again, I think they're preying on these, certainly young adults that are looking for a place to live, and if they see something really cheap, they try to jump on it and in a hurry before someone else beats them to it. And unfortunately, we've been seeing some of these scams.
And by the way, as the sheriff was mentioning, there is a Facebook post that you guys have on your Escambia County Sheriff's Office. I'll share it over to our news radio as well. But, unusual methods of payment, no lease or paperwork, unrealistically low rent price, too good to be true, pressure to act fast, no in-person meeting, all good, red flags. Any one of those is probably enough to be concerned, more than one. And, almost certainly you're dealing with something that's, not above board. And I appreciate that. Hey, just a quick thing. You were talking about the mental health in the jail, and I know you're in a unique position, having been the sheriff, having also worked for the county, and as you were the deputy city county administrator over the jail, and now, of course, you're the sheriff. Maybe it's a longer conversation, but is there big reform that should take place to somehow separate, what I might call ordinary criminals from people with mental health challenges or the multiple kinds, and in partnership maybe with Lakeview? Yeah, I know this is too much of a question to answer in a short period of time, but you have this kind of unique position. Do you see ways that this could all be managed better and or cheaper?
You know, there are a lot of things that are taking place in the local jails and even in state jails where there is some separation. There are programs. There are licensed mental health counselors at the jail. I say that there was, and I'm assuming that they still have these programs available to them. Is there more that can be done? I think these legislation like this would allow for an enhanced direction regarding those that have a mental health concern. I'm not saying that they should get off of the crime that they committed. I'm just saying that if there's some way you can get them back on their feet, so that when they do get out, they don't reoffend would be certainly beneficial.
Yeah, I know. Agree with all of that. Transition after and trying to, you know, fix the problem so it doesn't happen again. Preventing recidivism is a huge goal. Chip Simmons, he is Escambia County Sheriff in D.C. right now for the National Sheriff's Conference on Training, presenting stuff and lobbying and doing all kinds of good stuff on our behalf and enduring the cold and the slippery ice at the reflecting pool. Sheriff, as always, thank you for the time. We'll talk to you next week. Safe travels coming home.
You bet. Y'all take care.